Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Soundcheck goes to the movies.
Okay, that's the lick. Ah, beep, beep. Bang, bang. Ah! He said, we're going to record this.
That is how the film called We Like It Like That begins, with the song Bang Bang by the Joe Cuba Sextet. The film charts the startling rise of boogaloo, sometimes known as Latin soul, in the 1960s. But it also looks at boogaloo's controversial death in the 70s and its unexpected revival today. Joining me here in the Soundcheck studio is the director of We Like It Like That, Matthew Ramirez Warren. Matthew, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
As well as Joe Batan, the Boogaloo band leader and one of the main subjects of the film. Joe, good to have you back on Soundcheck.
Oh, it's back. It's nice to be here. Thank you, John.
So Matthew, let me ask you to start by defining our terms here.
Sure.
Boogaloo. How does it differ from all the other species of Latin music that are out there?
Well, boogaloo is very much a product of New York City, a product of the melting pot. It's Latin music fused with sort of an R&B soul style, and it's just, you know, a very funky, groovy sound, very representative of New York in the 1960s.
So, Joe, for you, was it, you know, is this a kind of a reflection of the music you grew up listening to?
Yes, actually, you know, growing up, we listened to the jukeboxes and what was on the top 40.
Top 40,
so we mixed this two cultures, the Latin with the clave and soul, and we put this together, and then we had this boogaloo backbeat of a cha-cha.
And the results pretty quickly caught people's ear. Here's Joe Batan with his classic song, Gypsy Woman.
Some come from nowhere to watch this carol.
Joe Batan and his song Gypsy Woman. Joe, what year was that?
Actually recorded in 1965 and released in 1966.
Joe, the last time you were on Soundcheck, we were talking about your song Subway Joe, because the Metropolitan, you know, the Transit Authority was doing that big exhibit of Subway, New York City subways on album covers, which just goes to Matthew's point that he made earlier, that this was a New York City phenomenon. I mean, it's Latin music, but it's New York music.
Yes, it was.
Well, I took the subway downtown one day just to find me some Chinese food. And as I sat down and looked up, what did I see? There was this little girl, who sure looking good. She said, mister, won't you get up and let me sit down? Can't you see I've been working all day? My back is aching and my feet are beat, and I'm afraid I'm going to need your seat.
It was from the streets of El Barrio, and you could feel the pulse of the kids dancing in the street. They knew it belonged to them. When they got into the dance floor at the Colgate Gardens in the Bronx, where else could you go and pay a dollar and dance all day from 12 o'clock afternoon all the way into the evening?
And Matthew, you have some remarkable footage of New York City, of people dancing in the streets and stuff. And where did you get that?
Well, it's been honestly, about a five-year process to make this film. And, you know, just looking at all the archival footage collections that I could find and anything I could find relating to New York and specifically the Latino communities of New York in that era.
Well, at one point, Johnny Colon is at the piano and he's sort of explaining how he got to his big hit tune called Boogaloo Blues. And that turns out to be one of the signature songs in this style in the 60s. Johnny Colon.
See, that's the blues element. George Golner signed us to Kotick Records.
He'd been in the business for a long, long time. He had the ability to put his finger on something that he heard that he thought was going to be a hit. Like Boogaloo Blues, when he heard me doing the riff on the piano.
That's what I was doing. He said, don't do this. Stay with...
That's Boogaloo Blues, Johnny Colon, and a big hit. And you know, Boogaloo is right there in the title, Matthew, so, you know, it's kind of emblematic of this, mm-hmm. this style of New York music in the 60s. So the documentary is tied to the 50th anniversary of Fania, which is the record label that a lot of these guys were on. And despite being tied to that, it is not like, you know, a poem in praise of Fania.
Right.
In fact... some of the guys talk pretty openly about missing royalties, abusive contracts, and stuff like that. You know, that was part of the story, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to understand that what is Fania now is not necessarily connected to what was Fania then. Of course, completely different ownership.
Right.
And also, while Fania was one of the labels during that era, there were many other labels as well. So the artists were talking about those other labels as well, like Cotique, Tico, Alegre.
Well, now that, you know, Joe, this is one of the things that some of, you know, some of the old Boogaloo band leaders are saying in the film is like, we're reaching Latinos, we're reaching black and white audiences, we're selling, you know, 250,000 records, and we're not seeing any money.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
true.
There was success, but it wasn't maybe, you know, being remunerated.
Right. The monetary point was never there. It's a shame because those labels were responsible for bringing the music out.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. The only thing is that a lot of those artists never got paid what they were worth, you know, and that's the shame of it.
Yeah. So this documentary is called We Like It Like That, which is clearly a riff on the famous song by Pete Rodriguez, right?
Yes.
And certainly this was one of the high water marks of Pete Rodriguez's career. Pete Rodriguez and his Boogaloo hit called I Like It Like That. The film is called We Like It Like That, directed by Matthew Ramirez Warren, who's here with me on soundcheck. So is Joe Batan, the Boogaloo band leader and one of the subjects of the film. And Joe, there was a generation of, you know, Latin musicians here in New York before you guys, people like Tito Puente and Machito. And you know, what was the reaction from that camp when you and Johnny Colon and Pete Rodriguez come along and you got the big band and you got the big sales and you got the big audiences?
Well, there was a little animosity because we were taking a lot of the work that those bands were used to. And actually, our style of playing mixed in salsa, but we did not only play Boogaloo, right? But what the Boogaloo that we played was very difficult for the other old guard to play. Mm-hmm. They weren't used to that, so they didn't have the singer. And, of course, there was animosity, and you name the names, the booking agents, they went out of their way to try to get them booked, and they had no success because we had all the jobs. All the Boogaloo bands for the next 3-4 years had all the jobs.
Matthew, to me, one of the really interesting kind of arcs of the narration, the narrative of your film, is Boogaloo appears out of this younger generation here in New York. It sort of rockets to ascendancy. And then there are the various conspiracy theories about who or what killed Boogaloo. So I want to play a clip from your film and then just tell me who we're listening to here and how this sort of fits into the story. Listen.
They decided to do away with it. They completely destroyed it. From one day to another, it was gone.
Top band leaders were losing money to these teenagers who would be happy to walk away with $15, $20. Something had to be done. Certain companies actually paid the radio DJs to stop playing Boogaloo music.
The first person you heard there was Elliot Rivera, who was a singer for the LeBron Brothers. The next person you heard was Bobby Marin, who was a songwriter and producer who had quite a bit of success during the Boogaloo era.
And so what do you make of they both, and there are other voices as well, that all seem to be chiming in saying, hey, we were killed off by an industry that saw us as a threat. What do you make of that?
Well, we try to put forth all sides in the film.
Well, since you say that, let me skip ahead just a few seconds in the film. Listen to this.
What really killed Boogaloo is they had that big hit by Johnny Colonel, you know, Boogaloo Blues, which was, you know, it was like the song of the 60s, you know? And then they had I Like It Like That by Pete Rodriguez. They had Bang Bang. And then what did they have? They didn't have any more hits. That's what killed Boogaloo. There were three big hits.
So that was actually Alex Masucci, the brother of Jerry Masucci.
The founder of Fania Records.
Jerry Masucci passed away. But we wanted to try and get someone from that camp in the film expressing their opinions. And, you know, the point he's trying to make was it didn't have the reach to last.
And then there's another side, which comes shortly after in the film, where one of the musicians actually says, look, it may have just run its course. Joe, did it run its course? I mean, it seems...
No.
It seems like Boogaloo never really went away if you knew where to look for it.
When Matthew first came to me and approached me, I said, if you're not going to tell the truth in this film, don't bother me. You see, I was edited out of the first documentary that Fania did, and certain things that I said, nobody touched the subject. Actually, they were told to not play my record because I was the first rebel or radical person to leave the label, and I tried to organize the bands for health care. It's criminal today that a lot of these band members can't even pay for their funeral. Their music goes on and on and on, and nobody's saying anything. They're not having these record companies being held accountable. Now they're not in existence. But the fact is that it's criminal.
So when you say, you know, that they were sort of pushing back at you because you were the first to leave, this back in the 70s, or
yes.
Is this still happening now?
Yes. No, well, they can't do it now because I've already blossomed. You know, I've shown that I didn't live by Fania alone because I went and approached and I did Sal Soul. So they can't say that.
Now, Sal Soul, your record label that you formed, is sort of this kind of combination of salsa and soul music. And salsa is what, you know, Fania becomes known for, Matthew, in the 70s, with great success. And, you know, it's kind of weird to think that the thing that comes after Boogaloo is actually more traditional.
Well, you know, it's an interesting journey as you go from Boogaloo to salsa. Yes, we have our conspiracy theories and our industry politics that played into that, but also you have to understand there was cultural politics. And, it was a time of, you had the Black Power movement. And in turn, Latinos, too, you know, took on a sense of empowerment and sort of a shift from kind of trying to assimilate in some ways to saying, you know what, wait, like, I'm proud of being Latino. I'm proud of my Latin music. I want to listen to my music in Spanish. At the same time, the Latin music industry in New York shifts its push to sell records now, not just within New York and within the U.S., but really, they realize that they can push records to South America. And that's how Fania and Salsa really become as big as it went on to be.
And Boogaloo is pushed back into the shadows. But as somebody says later on in the film, it never really goes away. And it's like the DJs who are crate digging and are finding this stuff and keeping it alive.
That's definitely true. You got to give credit to the DJs. And not to toot my own horn, but that's how I came to discover this music. Was I was into collecting records, and I would go to the flea markets here in New York, and I just started finding all these great Latin records, but especially these songs that would be half English, half Spanish, with this kind of funky soul groove mixed in with the Latin rhythms, and I was like, what is this stuff? And it just made me very curious. And the main thing I realized when I listened to this music is this is really a product of New York, which I know I've said before, but it was important for me because I'm part Colombian, and growing up I'd heard Latin music all my life, but I always associated it with somewhere else, somewhere far. It's something foreign, not from New York. But realizing that, and I'm born and raised in New York, so finding this New York sound that was just so interesting to me was, you know, I needed to know more. I needed to know more about it.
There's still a lot of that happening Is there a kind of a special place, Matthew, for Boogaloo in that musical spectrum?
I definitely think so. I mean, one of the DJs we feature in the film, DJ Termix, you know, he talks about how when he plays this music, he always often gets a reaction of people saying, "What is this from? Is this contemporary? Is this from now?" Because it really, it's kind of timeless. It's a timeless sound that you can put it on today, and you know, no matter what kind of audience, people will probably start moving, you know, tapping their feet, maybe nodding their head, and just getting into it. You know, so I can't see why not.
All right, well, as if to prove the point, we're going to wrap up with some music from the Boogaloo Assassins, a younger Boogaloo band. Matthew, Joe, great pleasure to have you guys with us today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. No, no, no.